It's 4 o'clock.
I'd like to welcome everybody to On Point. Your host, Don Allen. Your host, Ron Evans. Hey, Mr. Evans, how you doing out there?
Real good, Mr. Allen, on another kind of cold day here in the Twin Cities, in the upper, so-called upper Midwest, in the Ice Bowl, or whatever other definition you want to give it. But it's a beautiful, clear day here today, if you will, Saturday. Taking a look quickly, Mr. Allen, before we move to a guest that we have holding online. A lot of discussion going on with respect to the visit, the state visit, by the way. It's not an official visit. It was a more formal and diplomatically designed state visit by President Hu, spelled H-U, of the People's Republic of China. Very interesting couple of days. He then went on from there to a series of meetings in Chicago, where Mayor Daley is working very hard to try to put Chicago back on the map as an international marketing center, if you will, though Chicago has been doing some fairly lucrative business with China on export-import kinds of things. The prime discussion during the visit of President Hu was if, in fact, the United States and China can resolve some of the differences. A lot of discussion, of course, about export-imports, a lot of discussion about Chinese currency, a lot of discussion about, you know, the imbalance in export-import, a lot of discussions about, you know, China's regional role in the Pacific and the so-called Pacific Rim, though we haven't heard that word used in quite some time, and, of course, China's responsibility, that's the Western version, if you will, to deal with North Korea. And basically, the Chinese president smiled, did a lot of smiling, nodding, was rather firm in his reflections, though, with respect to China is and considers itself to be an equal partner with the United States at many different levels. Of course, the greatest concern of many of the conservatives is China's military ambitions, if you will. You remember we talked last week about Secretary of Defense Gates.
Yes.
Visited Beijing, kind of got caught in a situation where the Chinese unveiled some new toys, if you will, stealth fighters and et cetera. A lot of concern about that. And so a lot of discussion about that, a lot of analysis or attempted analysis, a lot of, excuse the pun, a lot of China watchers, if you will, who know the Chinese better than the Chinese know themselves, if you know what I mean. So
yeah.
That's something we'll certainly be looking at over the next couple of programs.
Okay. We have a couple other things going on in national news I think you want to cover with the size of Chinese, just what's going on out there in well, actually, we're going to save that to later in the show, talking about the Spokane incident.
Yes, we're going to probably do that at the bottom of the half hour. It warrants that kind of discussion, or as soon as we have a chance to chit chat with Mr. Clark. So, Don, if you would, let's move in with the discussion. Why don't you introduce Mr. Clark, and we can kind of hear what he has to say.
Yeah, of course. I'd like to introduce all our listeners to Mr. Jerry Clark, who is the founder and chief executive of We Care Minnesota. Some things have come up in the Twin Cities and about street smart streets and curbing gang violence and doing things like that. And I've had pretty intensive conversations with Mr. Clark. And we talked about that, you know, why go out of the state and bring another model here where we have some loose solutions here already. So welcome, Mr. Clark.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be on your show.
Okay. Thank you. Happy to have you with us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about We Care Minnesota and the dangerous, is it the dangerous black men's group?
No, I call it black empowerment. It's on a model from a group that's called Dangerous Negro, and there's seven Vanderbilt graduates, all with a bachelor's or better degree, and one long-term associate from Indiana. And the one I know is Tracy Holmes the second. He's getting a PhD in chemical engineering right now as we talk.
Hmm.
And their mantra is smart as a new gangsta.
Okay. And, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about We Care Minnesota and your organization? and what
just
you
a
do.
Small organization that was put up. I was affected by the disease of AIDS, and there was nobody speaking out in the right way about it. So I set that up about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And what I use it for is that there's something we need to get done, I'll try to do it.
Okay. And making
our life better in the Twin Cities.
And what are some of the projects that you're looking at? I mean, give me your thoughts, like we were talking about earlier on the different gang violence models that the city of Minneapolis, city of St. Paul want to bring in, and that seem, you know, a waste of money, and basically when we have that intellectual property right here in our backyard. Why don't you give me some of your thoughts?
Well, just since we've talked, Don, I found maybe you know this. We have a organization in Minneapolis. They're called Nonviolent Peace Force, and they send people over. They have an office here in Minneapolis, and that's their administrative office, and one in Brussels, Belgium. They send people to war zones, and they're doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
They've had people in Sudan and all over the world when there's conflict, and they try to solve them by getting the two sides to talk.
Okay, so this is the first time I'm even hearing of this group. Are they doing anything here locally?
No, they don't do anything domestically yet, and we're going to start that. There's something in Detroit that is like doing the same thing, just using some local people to get peace teams to send them across the ocean. I think we can use that same philosophy here in the Twin Cities.
Okay, well, Jerry, I have to ask you then. I mean, if we're sending people from Minneapolis, St. Paul overseas, what are we doing in our backyard?
That's a good question. Doctor, treat yourself, you know?
Okay.
I don't think we do much. What we have to do, I think, from all I've learned, we have to listen to these young kids that are out there playing around and getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. What do they want? And I think if you look really deeply into what they're thinking, they're feeling oppressed. And that's a word I hear a lot from the young kids. They feel like they're put down, they're not involved in anything, and they're oppressed.
Okay, and
In 2006, there was a seminar done by the Washington Post and Kaiser Family Foundation. It was called Path to Success, a Forum for Young African-American Men. And there were two men on there that I really had a lot. They were the only ones that wouldn't have a degree. But Marcellus Bishop Allen, he was a Blood, and James Luce White was a Crip. And they were in Newark, and they were having trouble. People were getting shot dead, and they were getting beaten up and everything. They called a truce, not a ceasefire, not a truce. They put their heads together, and now they have an organization called Saving Ourselves, and they show young men a different step to follow, and it works.
Okay. Well, are you familiar with Ceasefire out of Chicago?
Well, that's one where you get the cops involved, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking. I'm just asking, are you aware?
I read about it, yeah.
Okay.
I think if you get the police involved, they're kind of like the enemy in one way. The kids don't like the police. I talked to some young people, and I said, do you have any guns? He said, are you a cop? And I said, no. Yeah, we got a lot of them. What kind? Well, one guy I know has an AK-47. We got a lot of pistols. They're really big.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are armed up because they're afraid of the policemen.
Okay. Mr. Edwards, any questions for Mr. Clark?
Well, you've been kind of probing with Mr. Clark with respect to me. What's his understanding and knowledge about what's at play here? I mean, I understand a group that has been incorporated here in the Twin Cities that appears to go other places around the world, has a world headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. But, of course, our interest is, you know, what's going to be done here. I mean, we had officially in Minneapolis last night our second homicide as an example, shooting 3,600 in Clinton, 3,600 block of Clinton. Allegedly, there was the gun person or gunman was surrounded. I don't know what's happened with that, but we've really been taking a look at what's going on here. What amounts of monies have been spent? What amounts of money can be accounted for? What amounts of money cannot be accounted for? In 2010, we basically had two specific projects that were highly touted: Operation Ceasefire and Operation Safe Streets. One in Chicago, one in Boston. Those Operation Ceasefire also operates in Boston. So our interest here on point with respect to Mr. Clark is that what does he see happening and what is his take on the two programs, Operation Ceasefire and Operation Safe Streets?
Well, I'll start with the two current programs, Ron. Well, I haven't seen any good results out of them yet. I don't know if they've had any good results or not. Maybe cut the homicides in half, but one young black person makes me cry a lot. And I saw one lady in the state. She was 18 years old, shot in the back of the head. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we all, Jerry, we've all seen that. Unfortunately,
well, that's what gets me when you see young kids, their life taken at 18.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've seen them take it at 13 or 14. But I guess my question is, and by the way, neither one of the two programs, Operation Ceasefire, Operation Crossfire, are functional. These are discussions that have been going on. Dollar amounts had been discussed, but neither one of the programs are functional. Though a man by the name of Alfred Flowers was on a program on a radio station here with a woman by the name of Lisa Jones, and he was talking about he had just met with the chief on Wednesday, and the chief had told him, that was Chief Tim Dolan, had told him that the department, Minneapolis Police Department, would not be working with Safe Streets. The chief had his own ideas of what would happen. Too much money had been spent, and they would probably work through Bishop Howe of Shiloh Church. And so that brings me back to the question, what do you see, Jerry, going on right now as it pertains to what kind of program should be in place?
Well, I think what would really work is if we had a group of men out in the neighborhood talking to kids in their neighborhood and getting to know them well.
Well, let me just hold you on that particular point. Shiloh International Ministries, Bishop Howe, in October of 2009, before this critical past year of 2010, Bishop Howe received about $240,000-some. Correct, Mr. Allen?
Correct.
We discussed this 9-8 months ago. Bishop Howe indicated, and the Star Tribune has run a number of articles featuring what is going on at Shiloh, and Shiloh International Ministry, Bishop Howe and his supporters maintained that they had that kind of operation on the streets of our cities, that they had workers meeting with, facilitating, et cetera. Now, Mr. Allen, in the early fall of 2010, went out to do an interview with Bishop Howe, and then later we had Bishop Howe here on this radio program. And one of the questions Mr. Allen asked was to if Bishop Howe and his support staff could identify the territories that were being controlled by the quote-unquote gangs and what territories were under a challenge and being contested, and to just name some of them. And if I remember correctly, Mr. Allen, the good bishop was not able to do any of that. Is that correct?
Oh, he absolutely was not. You know, he could not identify the gangs, but what he did say that some of the gang members have come to church and given their life to God. So,
right,
but he could not identify. Like matter of fact, Mr. Edwards, today I was looking at this show about called Biggie and Tupac. It was on some cable channel,
mm-hmm.
And they actually laid out a map of Compton, California, and had where the gangs were. It had signified by some red lines and blue lines or green lines and the different gangs, and that just brought into my mind that, you know, we were talking, and it made me think of Bishop Howe, because I haven't seen anything like that from anyone in town that actually geographically lays where the gangs are, what, you know, their names are, and what they're doing, their activities. So we're still missing it by a huge mark here in Minneapolis. And
you know, and you're absolutely correct on that particular point. And in all my years of being involved with monitoring and being an activist and et cetera, I have never seen such a map, though I know that as a part of the intelligence gathering by the authorities that they're able to identify some aspect of it. But they're not able to do a good job because their intelligence gathering apparatus has collapsed and fallen apart over the last number of years. And I think that's just an excellent point. And I can well remember the discussion here, Mr. Clark, if you would, the discussion here and where we, in fact, encouraged callers and supporters of Bishop Howe to call in and to clarify for us and to help us get our minds right with respect to what really happened to that $245,000.
Mm-hmm.
Shiloh International Ministry was being set up by the mayor and the Minneapolis Department of Public Health to basically coordinate the expenditure of some of that $2.2 million that was supposed to come in under Operation Ceasefire. None of that happened. It fell flat on its face. In the meanwhile, the casualties continued, and in fact, we had almost 60 homicides, actual homicides, in this city. As a part of the warfare, and so I'm just trying to get a feel of where you think where are we at? How would you evaluate what is happening right now on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being maximum resolution, et cetera? Where do you think we are here in both Minneapolis and St. Paul with respect to dealing with the problem of gang violence and et cetera?
Well, I think we're probably about a 2. If we even look at any problems, we don't admit we have a big problem, and we do.
Okay, you figure we're at about a 2. Okay.
I think so.
All right. And
we can bring it up to 4 or 5.
Who do you feel are best qualified as it pertains to activating, if you will, the mechanism for the street workers and stuff? Is it the ecumenical community? Is it folks involved with social work programs like United Pillsbury United, or some of the organizations that are paid and funded very well? Or do we create a new vision, if you will? Who do you see structurally, organizationally, as being the people that should be entrusted with this responsibility? Or are all of us entrusted with it, but some are volunteers, some get paid?
Well, we probably have some volunteers at first, because you want to get some good people in there. And the minute you throw money into this thing, it gets complicated.
What I see happening
is, for the one thing I would bring from the outside, and I would bring into a bishop from back in Newark, New Jersey, and have him do an assessment of the area. He's really, really good at it.
Well, I thought one of the things that you had talked about was that there were resources here, and that why was it necessary to bring people from the outside?
But what you're saying now is that you have a little different opinion on that? Do I?
Yeah, well, you were just saying bringing in some bishop from
New Jersey. This is his nickname, his street name. He's a Blood, retired.
Oh, is that right? Oh, his name is Bishop. Oh, he's here in the Twin Cities?
No, he's from Newark, New Jersey, but he works all over the country now.
He's the only person I know that understands the gang way it works. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he could do that in his sleep, probably make a map for us.
Yeah, well,
he told me there's probably not a lot of gangs out here. There's probably just a lot of little cliques that are working.
Oh, okay. But that doesn't make a lot of difference to a mother who is putting her son away who's just been shot through the head, or a young girl, like you just pointed out, who's been shot through the head.
I was at a repast for a guy that was shot dead, and the lady was there.
Ten years of that same day, her son was shot dead. Yeah, but who's involved and who's not involved doesn't give a lot of solace to the parent and loved one of the victim who's gone. You know, let me just say this to you about if they're not gangs and things. You know, the former mayor Don Frazier and former police chief Tony Boza made that same statement here in 1982 after a young white girl by the name of Kurtz was shot and killed in Martin Luther King Park, execution style. I'll never forget that the way that they responded to that, Jerry, and I assume that you were around back then, the way that they responded in order to marginalize the African-American community was to say that these folks were nothing but copycats. And I can well remember the quote coming from me on the radio program that I had in those days was that it makes no difference to the bullet, and it certainly makes no difference to the loved ones of the victim if they are copycats or not. And unfortunately, since 1982, that's kind of the mentality that's operated around here, that when we bring in these so-called outside experts who come in and they've been in Newark or Cleveland or Detroit, you know, Gary, Indiana, Chicago, Los Angeles, particularly South Central, they come in and they say, well, you really don't have a gang problem here. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't misquote Bishop. Didn't say we had a gang problem. You said there are different kinds of organizations here. There are some
different kind of organizations.
Here.
Oh, okay. Did you say like what? I mean, what?
There's
like,
a Salvadorian
we
game.
We have different Crips, Bloods, Gangster Disciples. I mean, what does he feel, or has he discussed that much
detail work yet? He could tell us. And there's also really a very active and very mean Salvadorian gang here.
Salvadorian, okay. Salas 13 kind of guys, okay.
Yeah.
Now, how much does he charge to do this? I mean, what's his honorarium or stipend?
He's not real expensive.
Oh, he's not really expensive. Okay.
No.
Okay.
He wants to do this. He wants to do this for a living and help people out. What they did, they put their whole life on the line when they put this meeting together, and they decided they're not going to take it anymore, period.
Sure.
And they were getting people shot dead all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Allen, you have any additional questions?
I was just going to thank Mr. Clark for joining us for the first 12-13 minutes of the show, and we look forward to hearing an update. Of what he's going to be doing later on in the year. You can keep in touch with us, and shoot me an email, let me know what's happening. But any closing comments?
Mr. Clark.
I'd like to say one thing. I'd like to see a separate organization set up where we train people in nonviolent behaviors. Because what if you send people out in the streets to work with kids, they're going to beat them up like their dad did them. And we don't want that. We want people to be able to peacefully. So I think we could set a different example of how we deal with kids.
Okay. All right, Mr. Clark, appreciate it. Appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good to meet you all.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Who's the Peter Graves? Old school. Yeah. Well, we can move back into some other detailed information here and items, documented items that, of course, that me and Mr. Edwards have on file and in hard copy and on the computer. But first of all, I'd like to let you know that you can call 877-572-4288 for questions, comments, and concerns. Again, that number is 877-572-4288.
All right. Interesting week, 8-9 days here in the Twin Cities. As you reported last week, actually it was exclusively broken by On Point, particularly IV and NN. We had some friction between our ecumenical community and the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Yes, we did.
That reached a fever pitch, and if I'm not mistaken, BNN and other websites have posted a series of events at Central High School in St. Paul, which is our sister city. And you've also posted a couple of comments, if you will, by the head of the powerful Black Baptist State Convention, the Reverend Jerry McAfee of New Salem Baptist Church here in Minneapolis. There was a protest, I understand, about 70, 75 African-Americans dressed all in black came in, positioned themselves in front of the stage. I understand there were comments made, and then later I know, Mr. Allen, you were able to interview Reverend McAfee and Randolph Staton, a former state legislator who was the source of some controversy that we had been repeating here on and reporting here on Point over the last month and a half.
Good.
I'm a little puzzled by a email that emerged on Monday from Lisa Jones of a radio program on one of our stations here. She sent out an email in which she was critical of your analysis of some things, and then she proceeded to say that clarity could be presented with respect to the Tobacco Trust Fund, millions of dollars, by the way, set aside for different communities. We're not sure how much the black community got, but obviously they got a lot of money. But anyways, in her email of Monday, posted about 7:30, Mr. Allen, if I'm not mistaken.
You're correct.
She talked in terms that you needed to get clarification on your statements, which she said wasn't accurate. We have decided in our pre-staff meeting that it would be important for Mr. Allen to, lay out the sources. Normally, we don't like to specifically do that. We don't like to embarrass anybody, but Ms. Jones presented a rather serious challenge with respect to the authenticity. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
You are
information, salaries, funding, and et cetera. But in the course of that, she identified former council member Natalie Johnson Lee of the Council on Black Minnesotans as the executive director. And could you just make sure we identify this correctly? Because we've been trying to, over the last number of hours, find information on it. And so, Mr. Allen, could you just kind of walk us through what the heck happened here?
Sure, I would love to. Well, I went over Monday, and let's start from the beginning, kind of work the way back a little bit. Monday, I went over to cover, for On Point and our respective news agencies, the march. And there was a silent protest led by Reverend Jerry McAfee and the Honorable Reverend Randolph Staton. And I was there, and Lisa Jones, who was there in her white outfit, you know, as always, was there. And I told her, I said, you know, your terms are up, and I don't know why you guys keep on running the Council of Black Minnesotans into the ground. And she made a comment to me, kind of a personal, in my family type comment. And then I responded to her again by saying, okay, there's some money missing. But anyway, Mr. Edwards, I did some research, and I found that the Minnesota African American Tobacco Network, located at 2233 University Avenue in St. Paul, which is also under the Council on Black Minnesotans, has gotten a lot of money and distributed a lot of money for stop smoking campaigns. So I handily went to my Facebook page because, you know, Mr. Edwards, I've been here most of my life, you know, in and living in and out of the state, but not once have I ever went to some meeting at the Urban League or anywhere else that was focused on stop smoking to the African-American or community of color here. Mm-hmm. So I went to dig a little bit more. And so I had to go back to 1998.
Where now?
I went back to 1998. That's when things started to surface a little bit.
Okay.
So in 1998, you had the power players, Clearway, Minnesota, Blue Cross, Minnesota Department of Health, that had gotten some money based off this settlement that we talked about last week that Mr. Cerisi law firm, had handled. So I just kind of stumble upon the tobacco spending and research and interventions in selected priority populations. Okay?
Okay, I'm listening. I'm fast. My eyes are big.
Yeah, okay.
You can see. Okay.
Here we have a called an oversample of African Americans, which Clearway Minnesota participated in. It was $80,000, which was just an estimate, they say.
Okay.
Quality of African Americans with the Blue Cross participated in. This is like outreach, questionnaires, interviewing individuals, which was $25,000 from 1998 to 2007.
Okay.
Then we come to the Minnesota Department of Health piece between 98 and 06. And we look and we see that the Minneapolis Urban League received $262,000 during for that time period to address this tobacco and the African American community, basically stop smoking and awareness and kind of prevention type things.
Okay.
And then I go down to the fifth entry. It says African American Family Services. So I was puzzled, Mr. Edwards. I had to wrap my mind around this because I wanted to know, is there one African American Family Services? Is there two? Is there three? But I found out there's one African American Family Services, period, in the Twin Cities. Okay?
Well, and for purposes of transparency, Mr. Allen, because there has been a question relevant to the validity and integrity of On Point and Mr. Allen and by extension myself and others. Is there another African-American Family Service in the state of Minnesota?
Well, you know, I Googled. I did a white pages, yellow pages, business search. I did a number of different searches on the Internet and on the telephone, geo-targeted to the Twin Cities the MSA, the Twin Cities.
Keyword, geo-targeted, geo-targeted.
Yeah, geo-targeted.
And so I can already answer my own question. There is no other African-American Family Service other than the one identified in the reports as it pertains to the tobacco settlement. But go right ahead.
Exactly. So we get down to African American Family Services, and we're seeing here that from 1998 to 2006, they got $833,000. And then an organization called Breaking Free got $32,000. And Sabathany is there with $92,000. And for a grand total of $1.8 million for this.
How much again?
$1.8 million for this, 1998 to 2006 kind of engagement with the community of color to say, hey, put down those cigarettes.
Stop poisoning yourself in the suburb.
Okay. So with that said, Mr. Edwards, I then contacted some people that I know, some people that don't necessarily agree with what I say, but they'll have some good information. I said, have you ever been to a stop smoking or smoking prevention type interaction from this particular agency, African American Family Services, or has there been a meeting? Now, right. I'm not saying, Mr. Edwards, that they haven't done a meeting, but I'm saying, who's been to one? Can someone call in and verify that this has actually happened? And I challenge someone. And the phone lines
yes,
are open.
Sir, please.
Phone lines are open again at 877-572-4288. Now,
okay.
I went back to Facebook because that's where I get a lot of responses to. And I'm actually working on this whole story to post it on IBNN. But I put in African American Family Services, Lisa Jones, responds to 1998, 2006, and $800,000. So here's what I wrote. And I wrote this as a note in Facebook. It says, follow the breadcrumbs. African American Family Service received over $800,000 to do stop smoking awareness in the black community of the Twin Cities. Ask yourself, when's the last time, if ever, you went to a meeting on this topic? And I put in parentheses, never. Follow the money. It talks. Now, Lisa Jones responded by, this is so sick. I refuse to respond to this ridiculous point he is making at any length. However, if I say nothing, there's a risk that someone who doesn't know the accuser might actually think there is merit whatsoever in this ludicrous allegation. As is customary, none of this is based on fact. That's her first paragraph, okay?
Hmm.
And I actually have the report in front of me right now from the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network that says between 1998 and 2006, African American Family Services and Lisa Jones received $833,000. $100,000. $833,000. Okay? So
okay.
I'm not based in fact. Okay? So next paragraph. Whatever African American Family Services referred to do in the attachment, it isn't where I work. Perhaps rather than to deal in this meaningless conjecture, perhaps you could ask Natalie Lee Johnson, Executive Director of Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network, directly to clarify which African American Family Services the attachment refers to, as we have never received one dime from the Minnesota Tobacco Organization. And so, I mean, I'm seeing this there in African American Family Services, $833,000 on an official PDF, Achievements and Lessons Learned, 2001 to 2007. It's from the Council on Black Minnesotans, and it says the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network. You Google it, you can print it up and see it for yourself. This is not a big secret, okay?
Okay.
And the next paragraph, I won't even waste our time writing more about this. Mr. Allen is being rude to me. So working to change the subject, I started wishing him well on some blessings. He is the most rooted person I have met, and he walked away. So, cool. Perhaps we can spend less time listening to hollow threats and keep moving in the interest of the village. Ultimately, excellence is always the best response instead of this kind of insanity.
Okay. And so the insanity is what? The fact that a good investigative undertaking uncovered a trail of significant activity to the amount of $1.8 million that is supposedly being directed towards and utilized by the African American community in Minnesota and specifically the Twin Cities. Is that what we're talking about? That should not have been revealed? I'm puzzled on this end of the studio, if you will.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Edwards, I mean, if this is the case, so let's play devil's advocate or saint or whatever right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that Lisa Jones and the African American Family Services didn't get a nickel of this money. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Then we have to look at this report issued by the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network on to as why this $833,000 amount from the Minnesota Department of Health is right here in black and white.
Let me ask you this question, Mr. Allen. Let me play a prosecutorial role here on this end, though, you know, it's obviously self-serving. Do you think that the author of the email that you've read, Ms. Jones, do you think that she didn't know that these reports were in the public coffers, if you will?
Well, Can you say that?
I mean, she clearly knew something about the procedure and the protocol because she identified in the, and you haven't gotten to, oh, you, I think you did. She identified one, Natalie, and the name is Natalie Johnson Lee. She identified her as the executive director, and then she went on to say to you that this person, Natalie Johnson Lee, would confirm that the African-American Family Services never received a penny, and you are holding in your hand at this very moment, and you're indicating to our listening audience, both national and international, where they can go to obtain the same information. Do you think that this highly paid administrator knew about the documentation, or did she just think that in the village, if you will, that folks don't have computer capability?
Well, I think that she's hanging out with Alfred Flowers a little bit too much, and it's the dumbing down of the black man. Okay? Everybody is not like that, and there's some of us with degrees and know how to do research and write and read and do arithmetic. So with that said, Mr. Edwards, this report that I have here in another studio that I'm waving the papers around from the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network, Council on Black Minnesotans, on the last page, page 6. Now, this is what puts the nail in the coffin for her comment in the first place. It says, this chart only includes dollar amounts that are publicly available either via the funder's website or printed annual report. However, it does not include several estimates for research grants. So there's probably more than $1 million out there, okay, Mr. Edwards.
Okay. And so we are now faced with a situation which led. Now let us go back to the genesis for this portion of our program, because this all began to start when the Council on Black Minnesotans, in which, by the way, Ms. Jones is a member, though her term is up, of the Council on Black Minnesotans. Natalie Johnson Lee works for the Council on Black Minnesotans, and according now to Lisa Jones, is the executive director of an entity identified as the Black Tobacco Fund, whatever. Now, this all got started when the Council on Black Minnesotans withdrew its invitation to former state representative Randy Statt, correct?
Yeah.
And substituted a black film producer, a legend here in the state of Minnesota by the name of Robin Hickman, a young African-American. Later on, and in the interview that you did with Reverend McAfee, president of the Black State Baptist Convention, powerful, powerful ecumenical group here in Minnesota, he also indicated one of the things he was outraged about was the fact that Michelle Bachmann, Republican Congresswoman, 6th Congressional District of Minnesota, had also been brought in as a speaker. Now,
yes,
I heard some of the folks that we've kind of named indicate that Michelle Bachmann, he wasn't even on the premises, was not invited, and et cetera. And we understand that the Reverend Jerry McAfee stands by his statement because he said to you, if I'm not mistaken, and we're calling it up on the computer here now, is that he had obtained the agenda for the Martin Luther King Day activities on Monday. On the previous evening, on Sunday at his church, he had received a copy of the agenda. Now, is that what you're seeing on your computer?
Yes, and that is correct, Mr. Edwards. You just mentioned Reverend Statton. He was clearly upset, and if you don't mind, I would just like to play that 1.9.
Let's do that, Mr. Allen. Let's go right ahead.
Let me just add to what Reverend McAfee has said, too, because he is the council.
Kind of.
I was the author of the King legislation. I was the author of the Council on Black Minnesotans. I was the author of the King Commission and so forth and so on. And to be asked to speak when Michelle Bachmann can speak, but you can't speak, and then be asked to step down was an insult as far as I was concerned. And we understand that we have to deal with the kind of cancer that exists both, number one, in the black community, because there were some black folks who allowed themselves to be used and pimped for this calling.
Amen.
We say it's time for that kind of sickness to stop. And we understand there were some institutions like the Teachers Association who, because you disagree with where it is they come from, who feel like they can silence you. If they can silence me they can silence any of us from speaking out against the court, Jeff.
Thank you. Okay.
Now, let me, for the purpose of historical clarification, Mr. Allen, that was former State Representative Randolph Staton who indicated in that interview with you, IBNN News, on Monday on the campus of Concordia College, which is adjacent to Central High School, that he was the author of the King Holiday. He was the author of the creation of the Council on Black Minnesotans, and he was also the author in the legislature of the King Commission. Am I correct?
You are correct.
And he also talked in terms of Michelle Bachmann. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Now, could you, are you, I'm watching now, are you in a position now to play the interview with the Reverend Jerry McAfee?
Yes, I am. I do have it right here. And for those of you, if you can't hear it too well, because it was a YouTube video, if you go to Google, go to YouTube and search for MLK Day, semicolon, Reverend Jerry McAfee on the Council on Black Minnesotans, it will pop right up. And you can view these for yourself. We did take them. So with that said, and this will have a little background noise, but we're just going to go ahead and play it.
All right. In fact, it appears that the tobacco contractual commitment is now being operated out of a church in North Minneapolis in the basement by a former Urban League employee. And so I'm, you know, last week you reported as a part of the Pacific person that, that made the contact. It was a part of On Point's programmatic portion, is that the legislative auditor, which is a very powerful office here in the state of Minnesota, you know, shepherding and monitoring what goes on with respect to the taxpayers' monies and actions, indicated that, that they had set out some red flags for the Council of Black Minnesotans as it pertains to financial reporting, accountability, and et cetera. Is that not correct, Mr. Allen?
That is correct. I contacted the legislative office, and I talked to Ms. Mary Moser, who was alarmed and shocked after getting the email with the Council on Black Minnesotans conversation they were having in a board meeting. And for those of you that didn't hear it, Mr. Edwards, it's really short. Can we just go ahead and play it?
Yeah, let's go, Russ. Let's put it up, because there are questions of credibility that have been posed by some. Go ahead.
On your committee, I would suggest that you discuss it with the people on your committee. I'm not going to turn this into a fight, okay?
Madam Chair,
the point is done.
All
on your board,
respect,
and we're going to move on.
Madam Chair, can I
say something? You cannot. No, you cannot.
Now, that's Lisa Jones speaking in the background right now as we listen. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, that was Lisa Jones, that last person at the end.
That's right, the last person.
Yeah.
Now, the reason that we are so disturbed here on Point is that the person, the woman who you could hear indicating that you will not be allowed to speak and we're going to move on and et cetera, is an assistant city attorney.
Yes, she is.
For the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. She is an official officer of the court. Since we last talked about this a week ago here on Point, she has been using her good offices to threaten, and we stand by this statement, and challenge Susan Siegel, the city attorney, and the mayor, and others. She has been threatening dissident members of the Council on Black Minnesotans with legal ramifications. And in this city, it's real dangerous because, example, sometimes you turn the police loose, as happened in this city a couple of days ago, where six or seven young African Americans were beaten into unconsciousness by police, and we called people's attention to the story in yesterday's edition of the paper, that when city officials in this city began to talk in terms of warnings and that there will be consequences for your inquiries and et cetera, people have to be a little concerned, and I think we saw some of that, unfortunately, last week when we did have a member of the Council on Black Minnesotans call in, but she clearly indicated that she was feeling stress and threats and would limit her observations and comments. And part of the reason is that the city attorney's office has utilized one of its individuals, who is the chairperson of the Council on Black Minnesotans, to threaten and intimidate members of our community and specifically members of the Council on Black Minnesotans. But I can understand, Mr. Allen, when you talk in terms of the possibility of misappropriation of $1.8 million in tobacco settlement monies that is being handled by the Council on Black Minnesotans and others, I can understand where we reach a point that powerful political institutions are used to silence any dissent or any inquiry.
Okay, and then, Mr. Edwards, you know, we have one more audio track that I actually uploaded to the show switchboard that I like to play.
Go right ahead.
I played the soft one first. This is the gangbuster right here.
If you'd like to discuss,
I'm going to bring this meeting to a close if we're going to continue to argue like this.
The committee and how it's working this
week. I want to bring
free to call me.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're wasting these people's time.
Come on.
You know what?
I
you need to grow up. That's what you need to do. Stop being a showboat.
And
have some significance.
Because
she said, I'm one of my lips. Is she angry? I'm sick of this charade. No, don't come on. You just got finished yelling at me. Now she butts into the statement that I'm making.
You are totally out of order.
Is Melissa out of order?
I think we're going to bring this meeting
to a close. Because this crap needs to stop. All of these excuses, you make commitments, stick to them.
You cannot.
That's why we're having problems with Big Bible now. All these stupid excuses. No, you know what? You need to be fair. You are not fair. You're not fair. You're one-sided in your perception of things.
This is unacceptable.
Point of order. I think on the page, on the two-page document, we have a resolution that I think with our funds, yeah, we can reduce it from 12 to...
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was the excitement of one of the ladies getting really beat up by Ms. Lisa Stone.
And could you, Mr. Allen, for the purpose of transparency, could you give us the specific date of that particular confrontation within the confines of a state organization or state entity called the Council on Black Minnesotans? That was on a Tuesday, is that correct?
That was Tuesday, January 11th at 7 p.m.
That's correct. And then within 6 days, additional attacks were leveled against you and IBNN, this program On Point, by city officials, by so-called state officials, by so-called heads of social organizations, because we clearly were getting too close to what apparently has been a significant mismanagement of $1.8 million. In tobacco trust fund monies. I mean, that's what's happened here, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and you see, what really, I pay attention to this, Mr. Edwards, I know you do too, and I know a lot of our listeners domestically and international do. What we have happening here is, you hear Martha Dimmick and Lisa Jones like, you know, oh, we're not paying attention to this. This stuff isn't right. You know, they don't know what they're talking about. In fact, we have the paperwork right in front of us, okay? So
right.
We obviously do know what we're talking about.
Right.
But they want to defuse or put down anybody that's getting close to busting this thing wide open and asking the right questions to get the answers. It's all about asking the right questions. And
now, let me ask along those lines. We had agreed as a team here at On Point with our production staff and et cetera and our attorneys that we would allow the person identified by Ms. Jones as the keeper of the seal, if you will, former Councilwoman Natalie Johnson Lee. Communiques were sent to her at around 10 minutes to 2 Central Standard Time, which is 3 hours ago. Has the executive director of the Black Minnesota Tobacco Trust, has she responded, sir?
No, she is not. But, you know, I sent her a message through Facebook because we are friends on Facebook, and I sent it behind the scenes so only her and I could see it. And I just wanted to get some clarification because I have no ill will toward Ms. Natalie Johnson Lee at all. But, you know, we have to clear this up because what has happened here, Ms. Lisa Jones has thrown Ms. Natalie Lee under the bus.
Yeah.
You know?
By the way, the number is 800-572-4288.
Again, that number is 877-572-4288. We have quite a few people listening right now. I appreciate you tuning in, and, you know, your thoughts are welcome. Pick up the phone, dial the number, 877-572-4288. Ask some questions. We'll be glad to help you.
Yes. All right, Mr. Allen, we want to move on to another investigative report that we have done here at On Point. As you know, Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, Gabby as she's affectionately called, has been transported or transferred by being transported to a very, very highly touted medical facility in Houston, Texas. We've been following closely the attempted assassination of her, the killing of 6 individuals, and the wounding of 13 or 14, depending on which news account that you read. But we wanted to update a series of very disturbing questions that have emerged. As we said on last week's program, that we are aware and have been for quite some time that there is more than this just kind of low-key planning that's been going on with respect to some of these unfortunate situations. We named a place called Sandpoint, Idaho. as you remember, Mr. Allen, mm-hmm. last week and the week before. And the week before would have been the 8th of January, the day of the tragic events in Tucson, Arizona.
Yes.
Now, our examination has continued to indicate that, contrary to what is being said with respect to Jared Lee Loeffler, that this individual did not act alone. And we pointed out that in the first week in October, in western Nebraska, that there was a series of meetings for the purpose of planning a very dangerous series of events. Mr. Allen and I have both been taken back by the incident on Monday,
yes.
January 17th, in Spokane, Washington, where a very powerful bomb was found in absolute proximity to the Martin Luther Day King parade there in Spokane. Better than 700 to even 1,000 individuals participating. I first talked to Mr. Allen about it because I had watched it for over 24 hours and it was shocked at seeing nothing. By that time, we had already began to talk to sources in the Northwest, if you will, and along the coast.
Yes.
There is nothing really being stated other than information that has been retrieved by Mr. Allen and IBNN and the National Research Institute with respect to the events on January 17th, a very powerful bomb that if it would have detonated, if it had not been for the attentiveness of Spokane Public Works, workers, if you will, that saw the bomb sitting on a steel bench, actually, supported to the extent of a brick wall in the back, which would have really created additional chaos. The backpack, by the way, as we now understand it, was packed with ball bearings and metal spikes and et cetera, and both Mr. Allen and I know and understand the devastation that could cause. Now, everybody is saying that there is no conspiracy, there is no complicity, there are no terroristic groups, and et cetera. Well, we are about to report in the next 2 minutes,
yeah.
And any callers will have to now wait. There is a place, as we said, called Sandpoint, Idaho. Just adjacent up the road from Sandpoint, Idaho, is a lake called Priest Lake. That is and running into that is the Priest River. This specific area, as we first reported back on the 8th of January, is a training ground for right-wing extremists here in the United States operating death missions, really. And we maintain Mr. Loeffler was, in fact, trained at a facility there around Priest Lake / Priest River. In fact, we would submit, Mr. Allen, that the bomb was transported from Priest Lake across the Washington-Idaho border, down Highway 2 into Spokane, Washington. We will close it by indicating this. There were a series of four meetings prior to the 17th of January. For folks who are in the Sandpoint area, who know this area, and for those who of the what I call the Billy Joe Bob Brigade who tune in and listen, there were meetings at 106 Bridge Street, 415 Cedar Street, 502 Fourth Avenue, and 120 East Lake Street in the Sandpoint area. Now, for those that listen in and et cetera, they know what those addresses are attached to. We say again, there were a series of meetings there, which were a continuation, Mr. Allen, of meetings in western Nebraska in the first week in October as part of a very diabolical plan, a very dangerous plan that has been put together, orchestrated by the right, if you will, that will begin to bring about significant terroristic activities in the United States. Part of that started with Tucson. It was to have been continued with respect to the backpack and the bomb. That was aborted when, and that bomb, by the way, was to have been set off electronically by cell phone. It was aborted once the observers realized that the bomb in the backpack had been detected. In fact, all news accounts and police reports indicate that the parade was rerouted. There are people in the Spokane area who said that they did not realize that a bomb had been found, a very powerful bomb. A bomb that could have killed up to 400 individuals if it would have detonated. So we feel compelled here at On Point to talk in terms that there is something amiss in our great nation, if you will, and is extremely dangerous. And I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, there was a reason that the national media, with the exception of Rachel Meadows, who did a piece and raised the same questions that we're raising here on Point, there is a reason that there's been no significant coverage whatsoever. There's been no analysis of what that bomb meant on Martin Luther King Day and the carnage that it could have created.
Exactly. And if our listeners, if you want to see the actual pictures of the backpack and what was left there on that street corner in Spokane, you can go to prettypatrick.com. And his story is called Device Found Monday in Backpack Along Martin Luther King Jr. Parade Route in Spokane was a bomb capable of inflicting multiple casualties.
Right.
So with that said,
and as we said before,
yeah.
Transportation came out of Sandpoint across the state border and down Highway 2 into Spokane, Washington. Folks know that. Authorities know that. Even our civil rights organizations have been told to stand down from raising any questions about this particular situation that could have created significant carnage in Spokane, Washington. I think it is tragic and very undemocratic, by the way, Mr. Allen, that this information is being suppressed because we are basically being told that we cannot look at the rights and the actions of the far right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what you're being told. The far right also knows that the intelligence services here in the United States do not have the interest or the capabilities to monitor and follow their activities. This is why the area up around Priest Lake and Priest River in the far northwest corner of the panhandle of Idaho has become a fertile ground for training and in some cases executions and torture. So we leave our listening audience with that about a minute after 5. Okay, what else we have, Mr. Al?
Well, we have a caller. Go ahead, caller. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, this is Johnny.
Hey.
Okay, John. What can we do for you?
Yeah, you guys are hypocrites. What do you do for your community?
What do we do for our community?
Besides tell lies, Mr. Edwards. Lies.
Oh. I don't think so. You know, in fact, what
no
we
fact.
Do for our
we
community.
Just,
well, hold up, Bob or Joe or whatever your name is. We report the news. See, we're newscasters. We are journalists. We are bloggers. When you ask what do we do for our community, I'm not necessarily going to get into the many things that Mr. Allen and I have done. But you talk in terms of being hypocrites and et cetera. Well, where is hypocrisy with respect to the information that we have been putting out?
No, you have no facts on nothing.
Billy Joe Bob. No. You haven't been listening. Mr. Allen has laid out where the empirical data can be found. No.
Oh,
no.
Mr. Allen is good at typing stuff up. He's treacherous.
No,
you guys are just
no.
hypocrites.
No, are you saying he typed up Mrs. Jones's email?
Yeah.
Well, then Mrs. Jones should deal with that. In fact, you know what she should do? She should go right to the authorities.
Yeah.
She should go to the authorities and she should file a complaint. With respect to criminal conspiracy, collusion, and et cetera. So that's what we would suggest that anyone who feels like you feel a bit about
it's time that you retire, Mr. Edwards, from what you do. You're just a hypocrisy, just full of lies, sir.
Oh, we don't think so here at On Point. We think that we're on point. And we think the documentation is there. It's clear. But, you know, it's good to have a breath of fresh air to the extent of those that basically hide behind the dark walls and walk the dark corridors of denial and nullification. And so I know, Mr. Allen, I feel good that whoever Billy Joe Bob is or that's calling in, that he's raised that question.
Well, yeah, he had a great institution. You're not talking about the kids. The city ain't closed down. You guys are not talking about the kids.
Oh, we talked about that last week.
Oh, yeah, we
did. Before.
We went into detail because it's all about the kids, and we talked in detail that we predicted this last year, but no one wanted to listen.
Well, have you guys ever went to the city to volunteer? I don't think so.
Volunteer for what?
For what?
To teach computers, to teach the kids anything?
There aren't any computers. There aren't any computers. Sir, I don't, you know, it looks like you're calling from somewhere outside of Minnesota. There weren't any computers up there. There weren't any computers. In fact, Mr. Allen broke the story with respect to some computers that were allegedly given, and when the people showed up later on in the week to assess how the computers were being used, the computers weren't there. They never could be found. They were sold. There weren't any computers up there, sir. Come on now. Come on. Come on now. Come on.
Well, I just know that Flowers or whoever these guys are, McAfee, they need to go ahead and take control of this. You guys are you're bad.
Take control of what?
Apples.
Take control of what? They are in control.
They are. We ain't trying to control nothing over there.
Yeah, we don't want to be the president of the organization or be the new minister in their church or anything. They are in control.
Mr. Allen, next time you go to City Hall, why don't you just sit down and listen instead of run your mouth and videotape stuff?
Mr. Allen doesn't run his mouth. Mr. Allen has never, you got it mixed up. Mr. Allen has never taken the public forum. I do. I'm the one that has stood up and raised questions about the disparity study and the refusal to investigate many multiple civil rights cases here. I'm the one. I know we all look alike, but you got us mixed up.
Yeah, well, you guys have a nice day. You're still hypocrites. You're doing nothing for the community.
Right. Thank you. Appreciate it, sir.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, I'm backtracing that telephone number right now. The number is 612-869-8800. And it's one of those clone telephone numbers that will go back to nothing because this has somebody downtown with the it's coming up on my computer program right now. This is downtown Minneapolis. This is a cloned trunk line. And this is the person actually used this phone number with the disguising voice module on there so we wouldn't know who it is.
Absolutely. And we've been watching this for over a year. And, in fact, we have been working closely with federal authorities and state authorities because they've been using numbers all across the country. We first began to detect it when they started using numbers out of Kansas City, Missouri, from the city of Kansas City. Them white folks down in Kansas City are pretty ticked off about how these clone numbers are being used. And because we have the kind of computer system in studio and that we've been working quietly with communications entities, able to do what we just did with respect. That was a cloned telephone number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm calling it again right now because I want
It won't answer. There won't be any answer.
Yeah,
there won't be any answer. But I think that the call was good and refreshing. The only thing is maybe one of these days the caller will actually use their own voice and their own phone and won't continue to violate the law by using a clone back number. In fact, give us the background again. I mean, I think the world needs to know how this is being handled.
Yeah, these are the calls that Mr. Edwards and I get on a regular basis from different phone numbers. Like we've gotten calls from Mortenson Construction, from the Urban League, from UROC, from the University.
Representative Ellison's office.
Yeah, Congressman Ellison's office, and it's usually the same one or two guys, and they dial this time from 612-869-8800. But I know that Jack Wad is still listening, and I just want to tell him. I do a lot of volunteering in the community. So does Mr. Edwards, okay? Just because you don't see it, you know, doesn't mean a damn thing.
It means they don't do any volunteering.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they were getting some of that tobacco money.
Mm-hmm.
Oops. Yeah. Let's go back to ended. Our good friend raised the question about City Inc. Now, of course, City Inc. is gone. It's out of business. As we had first reported, its doors have been closed. Its assets are now under legal jurisdiction. In other words, the attorneys and et cetera have been brought in. Their creditors, led by Franklin National Bank here in Minneapolis, are making moves to seize whatever assets are left. And, of course, at the center of this controversy is a $600,000 loan that should never have been made. False information was provided, and monies, cash monies, were used as a collateral that should not have been used. And the Star Tribune, by the way, has been sitting on a story for about a month, if you will, that talks about some very peculiar kinds of situations, but questions can't be answered, or people refusing to answer. And so the Star Tribune is, I understand, made a decision that it will not report on that. Also, they made a decision they will not, the Star Tribune here, will not report on the tobacco controversy.
That's not good. Well, Mr. Edwards, to these guys that are calling these programs, if you're using someone else's number or you're doing the wrong thing, you're going to get someone really upset, because my program here has given me a number, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to dial it and put it on speakerphone.
Okay, go ahead.
Leave me a message with your name and phone number. Thanks.
Did you hear that, Mr. Edwards?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know if they use his number to clone it or if he's the guy doing it, but I'm calling him as soon as we get off the air.
And see if he answers. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that unfortunately happens when good investigation and good investigative skills come into play and you start probing. Now, like I said, what we've done here, and that we, you know, have no additional calls coming in, one of the things we want to
do
now is to...
He's calling back, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, good. Let's put him on speaker.
Okay. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, you're actually live on the air because someone used your number to call into the On Point and call me and Mr. Edwards hypocrites. I just wanted to let you know that I just backtraced it and did a little check here. And someone, you know, you might want to check that out with your phone company. They're actually using your trunk line or your phone, cloning it and calling us. So I just wanted to give you a heads up.
The number you just called me on, the number 651, how the heck can
they
do that?
Well, I mean, I can't get into a long discussion because I'm live on the air, but, you know, someone knows how to do it, and maybe if you shake a couple trees in the right place, some raw bananas might fall out. No, just the number.
Cool.
Yes. Not your name, just the number. What you want to do is call your telephone provider and ask for security and tell them that you were... someone approached you and talked to you in terms that your number had been what is called cloned and used in an illegal manner. And your phone company may be able, using the most sophisticated electronic equipment they have, may be able to trace the number back to the trunk line or the cell phone used by the person who just called.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll get back with you after the show.
All right. Take care.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite hear all that. He said, how are they doing it? Is that how he said it?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been going on for a long time, and, yeah, we have pretty good feel. We've had pretty good feel for quite some time about who these individuals are. But it looks like we stirred up the water for them making a mistake, because I know that the manual that they use would basically tell them not to make a call to a on-air program given the electronic equipment that is available, okay?
Yeah. Huh.
Bad move, if you will. But back to the City Inc. situation. We are certainly looking forward to hearing what the audits. Now, we were told at the National Research Institute earlier this week by Corey Mitchell, a reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that they had, in fact, Mr. Allen, uncovered. And again, we came under criticism when we talked about this, that they had uncovered the audit, which showed that in the sale of properties owned by City Inc. on the south side of Minneapolis, that the person who was the board chair of record had used their, well, we'll do it like this, had used a family member to act as the real estate agent in the closing, purchase and the closing of the building, which included, of course, a nice percentage as it pertains to what was paid for the building, or the two buildings, in fact. And the Star Tribune has that audit, but they politically have made a decision that they really don't want to expose none of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Got to protect people. But anyways, that's what's at play. And so we continue to follow this because we still don't know what happened to the students, the 36, 37 students who were at the alternative school, what has happened to them. We don't know if they were facilitated for and if there's any place that they were accepted into.
No, we don't. We don't. We haven't. No word. But we'll probably find out something on Monday here coming up. And we need to know that because, you know, in spite of what that last jackwad that call just said, it's about the children at the end of the day. You know, it's not about the district headquarters or City Inc. closing because of mismanagement or whatever, but it's about the children. And as we reported here, starting on January 5th, Mr. Edwards, I don't think the children in this situation got a fair shake at all, nor did the young ladies at the Broadway school. So,
and on that particular point for our domestic and international audience, we had a situation at a Minneapolis public school that was specifically designed for young students, young mothers who were pregnant, children, et cetera, come to find out that they thought that they were getting full academic credits and et cetera. Those credits had been withdrawn, and we now find out that at least a couple of instructors at the facility were unlicensed, if you will, and apparently that got by, quote unquote, the Minneapolis Public School District and these young women. In fact, in attendance, as you may remember, has now dropped from a little over 100 to somewhere in the 40s. And there was a couple stories here in the major paper that talked in terms that a couple of the young ladies have obtained legal counsel and are talking in terms of suing the district for this egregious act, which has sent them back to square one as it pertains to getting their high school degree or equivalency or et cetera, because there was absolute fraud within the school.
Yeah, and so that's something that we'll be keeping a close watch on, too, and just to figure this all out.
Yes, this also comes at a terrible time because the Minneapolis Public School District, as we know for our domestic listeners, local listeners, if you will, really has some serious financial problems. We continue to raise the question if there is actually any money to build what I refer to as the Crystal Palace, their new headquarters, which is to go in along the 1200 block of West Broadway. Now, one other quick point that while we have, because it's in keeping, Mr. Allen, with the national agenda, if you will, the Republicans talking about jobs, and we've been asking the question, where are the jobs? Now, the local radio, black radio station here, used a program on Thursday to report that state representatives Hayden and Champion were going to hold a meeting to entertain reflections and recommendations from citizens about the job and what the new job
looks like. Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get it. Let's get it. Let's get it.
Hi, you're live on point. What's your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Mustafa. I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Yes, okay. Mustafa. You called before. Go right ahead. What can we do for you?
Yeah. I hear that that school in Minneapolis, and I personally know people who never been to school, any kind of school, who get paid by Minneapolis public schools in my Somali community, who just show up once a week and go to some office and get paid that way. And I think that's corruption, and they intentionally trying to cover up themselves because they saw to to silence everybody. And that's how they corrupt our communities. And I think we should do something about it. And I'm glad you're doing something about it. Second, I was calling, asking about if you, I'm sure you are aware of this police raid in North Minneapolis. I seen that on Star Tribune. So what do you know about that? And
well, I'll respond very quickly. In fact, we also are aware of the police conduct at the Somali mall in South Minneapolis a couple weeks ago. But the one in North Minneapolis along the 3200 block of Fremont Avenue North, Minneapolis Star Tribune, Matt McKinney was the lead reporter, writes that police were executing a search warrant looking for drugs and proceeds from drug sales and et cetera. They went into a facility along the 3200 block, but prior to entering that building, they saw a group of young blacks standing outside. Now, in the article in yesterday morning's paper, the young African Americans, male and female, said that they were going to a party, which was also on that block. But police, at least 25 to 30 strong, jumped out on them. They later went into the facility, tore it apart. A number of African Americans were beaten. A couple were beaten into unconsciousness, is what I think that you are talking about. We all saw the picture of a young man by the name of Page, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen. You could check it while I'm talking. But Mr. Page was beaten into unconsciousness. The police initially were going to try to take him to the jail. There is a standing policy, Masafa, in Hennepin County under Sheriff Richard Stanek that people who come in who are beaten and et cetera will not be admitted. What Bartholomew and the other officer forgot to mention is that they actually tried to transport him into the jail. The jail refused to take possession of him. They then had to take him to the hospital. That's how he actually got to the hospital. Now, in the article yesterday, his sister raises the question about why they didn't call an ambulance. They thought they could get away by taking him to the jail. His injuries were so severe. In fact, he has some severe damage to his left eye, if I'm not mistaken. Two other individuals were beaten pretty good. Money was taken and et cetera. So that's what we here on point know about this particular situation. I told my colleague, Mr. Allen, that though they were released without charges, what the police do here normally is that they will charge them by what is called complaint. In other words, you'll get a letter in the mail, and you will be told that you have been charged with the following offenses. One of the dangers of that that's used here oftentimes, if you are not at that particular address or if you do not receive the mail, then within a period of time, that particular charge goes to a warrant. Maybe 2-3 months later, 5 or 6 weeks later, you are stopped on a traffic stop or you're stopped on the streets by the special Gestapo unit. You find out that there's a warrant out for your arrest, and then you're really in trouble. And then when they take you to court, the judge talks badly about you, and then additional charges are incorporated. But my sense is that the young men and women, there was about 8 or 9 in total, probably need to get them the best possible attorneys they can find.
Yeah, that is because I know they need an attorney, and they may be manipulated by people who don't have their best interest. And that goes, it's not only on African-American communities they do that. They do that to everybody.
Yes, they
and,
do.
Plus, none of these kids had any criminal record. So I think what they're trying to do is, you know, and I know they try to do all the time to make sure that everybody has a criminal record of some form. So
yes,
they can,
because in this country, that'll take you right out of the job market.
Yeah, so
you're
and none
correct,
of them.
Sir.
Yeah, none of them ever been in trouble with the law. So that's what's going on. I was given a ticket. They claimed that my license was suspended. That was a couple of months back, and actually I have to go to court on Monday. And My license was suspended, you know. And
yes, well, that's a tactic that we use quite a bit here. the computer was misread and the information was misread. What it does, it puts a financial burden on you. You have to, unless you can qualify for a public defender, you have to get an attorney. Most people can't really afford it. But what it does, it creates discomfort, if you will, inconvenience, if you will, and et cetera. That happens quite a bit. And, of course, as you know, sir, if you are a person who is not an American citizen, if you're an immigrant or et cetera, it could affect your status because that offense then goes on your record and they'll tell you that it's expunged or that it's taken off, but a lot of times that don't happen. But we hope that we were able to respond. We're coming up on closing, but, feel free to call us at any time on our next program and update us on anything you want to talk about.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. All right.
Yep.
Interesting, Mr. Allen. but I know that these kinds of things are being taken care of by our organizations because clearly most of our organizations have been well-funded. Would you agree?
I agree.
We have about what, Mr. Allen, about four minutes?
Four minutes left, yes.
Okay.
And we still want to ask, of State Representatives Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden and actually Mr. Louis King, where are the jobs?
Yes, we definitely need to know. Go ahead, your thing.
The African American population or the black population, whatever you prefer, are here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, are the most overtrained minority ethnic group in the state of Minnesota. But there's any pipelines to jobs. So we're asking again this year, rather than them coming out and saying we're going to have 200 jobs or 2,000 jobs this summer, which they've done over the last 3 or 4 years, and nothing ever happens. We're going to ask them point blank in the beginning, where are the jobs? Where are these jobs that you come from? Now, they can't play the union game with us because the unions have not only white people, but people of color sitting on the bench, been there 4 or 5 years that haven't gotten jobs. So we're not going to let them play the union game this time, that the unions are bad, the unions aren't letting people go in. Let's find out what they're going to create, how they're going to use their creativity to actually infuse some jobs here in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. So,
absolutely, and I think that definitely needs to be. I think that's in order. I think all of that is in order, and I think we'll continue to push this, particularly on this program, Mr. Allen, as we go into February Black History. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much emphasis on the first 2 months of the year with respect to the plight of the Negro, if you will. You know what I'm saying? And I think we'll. Yes, sir.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but the idiot here is calling back.
he's only got about 2 minutes. What's Bob got to say?
How can we help you, sir?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. All right.
How can we help you?
Yeah, see what happened. Billy Bob was trying to get his thoughts together.
Yeah.
And he was having a problem getting his thoughts together. And then he probably received a signal. He probably didn't continue to listen. He didn't realize that we had busted him, dummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll get back to us next Saturday. That's if the authorities don't sweep one on him, I could tell. He didn't realize that we had already busted him.
Well, we have 1 minute left, Mr. Edwards. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in today on Point. We'll be back here. We'll be here next Saturday at 4 p.m. with a very interesting show and some breaking news. Don't forget to tune in if you live in Minneapolis, the Minnesota, our Minneapolis Television Network, Channel 17 at 5 p.m. for Black Focus with Mr. Edwards. And Mr. Edwards, what is your topic tomorrow?
We're talking about the sad events of Martin Luther King, Monday, the 17th of January, the things that happened. And we take a look also, interesting enough, Mr. Allen, at the tobacco money. And we join with our colleagues at IBNN with respect to reviewing the same exact information and raising questions about the $833,000.
Okay.
All right.
with that said, you know, remember to read Mr. Edwards' column in the Spokesman Recorder weekly and visit the Independent Business News Network. Thanks for listening.
And in the column, we talk about January 17th. Oops.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thank you.